Hi everybody, welcome back. Cricket Tonight. This is our 25th episode. Welcome back, Pralab.
Hi, how are you, Ami?
And a big welcome back to Mr. Gov.
It's great to be back. I just want to say a few things. First of all, I want to thank Pulkit Gupta for filling in for my spot over the last couple of weeks. I made sure I tuned in to all the podcasts that I missed out on when I was over in Amsterdam eating brownies. And I actually got a lot of fan mail actually telling me how much they miss me and how much the podcast was lacking something.
We know we all have access to this email account, right?
No, I actually got personal emails telling me how much our base and our fans were missing me. And one of those emails was from Pulkit and Pulkit too. So like, I think the podcast was missing something without me, but it was great. And it's great to be back.
I think you read those emails when you were having those brownies clear.
I would definitely agree. Big thanks to Pulkit. He was great on the podcast for the last 2 weeks. So Gov, as we sort of mentioned, you were relegated. You might have thought you were on a vacation, but really, you were off the podcast. So yeah, exactly. So this is a big moment for you, Gov.
I'm going to step up and... Actually, yeah, make sure the selectors, you know, feel justified in picking me again.
Yeah, that's right. We don't want to
have another... You're getting older. We got a really good look at the 2019 podcast series, like the Indian team should be doing as well.
I'm 29. I'm in the peak of my career. All right.
good stuff. Good to have you, Gov, back. So, you know, this fortnight's been pretty big for cricket. A lot has happened around the world, especially. I'll quickly just cover off the India-Sri Lanka series in about 30 seconds and just say that India once again thrashed Sri Lanka in the last T20 series. This is one of the most one-sided series I've seen in probably all of cricket. You know, this last match, Kohli and Manish Pandey just dominated. It was another big victory for India. If you guys have any one-word thoughts, just say that about Sri Lanka and India.
Completely agree. I think 30 seconds is all Sri Lanka really deserves. India continue their dominance. They've embarrassed Sri Lanka, and Sri Lanka really have to go back to the drawing board and start figuring out what the next steps for their team is, because, you know, we've seen a lot of thrashings over the years. India's been on the wrong side of a few thrashings. I remember a few years ago they got swept and destroyed by England in England, but that wasn't even close to the shellacking that Sri Lanka felt at the hands of India. So, look, dark times ahead for Sri Lanka.
Yeah, brilliant series. I'm looking forward to the return series in India very shortly, and that's a sarcasm if you can't tell on the podcast.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe in the next few months, Sri Lanka can, you know, bring back Kumar Sangakkara and Jayasurya and Mahela Jayawardena, and then we might have ourselves a game.
And actually, on that point, they are looking at talking to them as part of to rebrand Sri Lankan cricket. So as you know, some of the selectors resigned and they're looking to reshape parts of the administration of Sri Lankan cricket. So they are talking to Jayawardena and a few of their senior leaders. So hopefully they do come in and get involved so Sri Lankan cricket can get back to where they belong, which is towards the top, at least, in cricket world.
Yeah, even though we don't really think Sri Lanka was much competition for India this whole series, there were still some positive performances by some of the Indian players. I think Virat Kohli has returned back to form in this series, and also Manish Pandey played quite well as well.
Yeah, Manish Pandey was great. Good to see Chahal playing. Akshar Patel, as I said last podcast, proved he was a really great bowler, and he's putting serious pressure on Jadeja and Ashwin. Which we'll talk about in the preview of the upcoming series against Australia. But we'll just quickly cover off some other series before we get to that. We had a great test series that winded up Australia with Bangladesh. Last time on the podcast, we talked about Bangladesh beating Australia, actually, in a historical moment for them. But Australia have come back and they've evened up the series. It ended up 1-1. One of the best performances I've seen in test cricket from a while from David Warner, getting back-to-back hundreds. And that was huge. I'm sure Pralab, he's smiling over here because he knows how much of a fan of David Warner he is.
I will say this. Like, it was a brilliant innings. And David Warner has now found a way to be successful in Asia. So I had question marks over his approach. And I think the biggest thing for me with David Warner has been, and I called this out before the series, he's not willing to modify his approach in Asian cricket. And what I found in this test innings and the test innings before, he actually did modify. So this is actually one of his slowest hundreds in history. And that just shows he's adapted, he's become a bit maturer, he's taken that vice captaincy a lot more seriously. And I'm looking forward to seeing how he goes next time he tours India and the other countries out there.
I think it was a great series. Bangladesh really impressed me, especially in their first test. And it was inevitable that a quality side like Australia was going to bounce right back. But I was disappointed that it was only two tests. It's a bit of an anti-climax. You know, I want to see what Bangladesh were going to do coming back in the third test. I'm sure that they would have made some adjustments and corrected some of the mistakes they made in that second test. But, you know, we're sort of left wondering who the superior side was in this series.
Yeah, look, it's a great question. I think a lot of people were wanting a third test match in the series. But, as you said, credit to Bangladesh. This is a step forward for them. It's a big step forward for them. And we're hoping to see more of Bangladesh soon. Who we won't be seeing much of soon is Shakib Al-Hassan, who is taking 6 months off now. So that's a huge moment because Shakib Al-Hassan was the player for them in the first test match when they won. And he's been a key player for them throughout the entire, whatever format they play.
It's not great timing. I mean, this test match win against Australia, I think, is potentially the biggest thing that's happened in Bangladesh cricket for a long time. I mean, there's one thing beating, West Indies or a team like Bangladesh, but to beat Australia, when Bangladesh weren't even the underdogs coming into this series, a lot of people were hyping them up, so they didn't sneak one past Australia. They actually won one legitimately by outplaying them. And the next 6 months to a year, I think, would have given Bangladesh the opportunity to solidify and cement their position as actually a quality team on the test stage. But, it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the team responds without the support and the leadership of Shakib.
Yeah, look, on the one hand, I get where he's coming from. He's played 10 to 12 years of cricket, and what people often forget is Shakib has been the best player. He also has to perform in all four innings, given he's an all-rounder. So he often leads with the ball, leads with a bat, and has a high degree of pressure on him, and that takes its toll eventually. He's asked for 6 months' leave, and I believe the selectors have come back and said that, yes, you can have it with the option of coming back in the second half of the 6 months. So what it comes down to is Bangladesh is due to play four test matches during the six-month period and will be skipping them. There's a big tour of South Africa, which I think he would have been instrumental in, particularly given Bangladesh's inexperience outside of home. So it's not ideal timing, that I agree. Personally, I would have thought that he would have probably skipped an ODI series or two and that could have given enough time at home. And I'd rather him focus on the longest format of the game, particularly as the 2019 World Cup is in, obviously, 2019, 2 years ago. So 6 months out of that game won't be too much of an issue. But, test cricket does take a lot more toll and demands on your body, and maybe just the way he's phrased it, he's talking about his body simply can't, it simply can't recover on a day-to-day basis in a five-day game. So I do get why he's taking a bit of time off.
Has there been much talks about what he's going to be doing in the next 6 months? Is he going to be travelling around Europe, doing Kentucky?
Kentucky, I don't think he's following your footsteps, Gar, but he probably is going to follow some sort of T20 Kentucky lead if there is one.
Yeah, look, I think the reason he did take the 6 months off is because he wanted to prolong his ODI career. So he definitely has a focus on the shorter form of cricket, and let's be honest, Bangladesh don't play much test cricket, and he's been in Bangladesh since almost the start of Bangladesh cricket. And he's only played 50 test matches in 10 years, which is not very much at all. But, he's somebody that has a lot of pressure, as you said, on him. So I think, and he also, aside from his Bangladesh duties, he plays almost every T20 league there is. And that's a big deal because he's actually a key performer in a lot of these teams. He's a great player that we can all agree on. But the timing of it, yeah, as you said, Pralab, like against Sri Lanka, a series in South Africa, he would have been instrumental and he would have actually given them a great chance. And what do you guys think about the chances against both South Africa and Sri Lanka coming up soon?
Yeah, look, I'd say Bangladesh is really good at home. They haven't proven themselves away. They had the series against New Zealand last year where they really struggled. So for me, I think they're going to go in as underdogs, and they deserve to go in as underdogs. I'd be surprised if they won a test match.
Yeah, especially without Shakib. Bangladesh have taken their cricket to a next level over the last few years, and it hasn't just been because of Shakib. But he's definitely the best player for them. At times, he's the best bowler and the best batsman. So that's going to be a massive loss for India. Oh, sorry, for Bangladesh.
We would like him, though.
If India were like England, we would have stolen him a long time ago. But,
yeah, definitely. Well, it's a very ballsy move. You might get that reference to a previous Shakib incident. But, hope he enjoys his time off. And it is only 6 months. It's not like he's not retiring. So that's a good thing. We will see him back and hopefully he'll come back reinvigorated and everything will come back. I guess the other series that we can talk about is the West Indies versus England, which is a great test series. We can wind up that one. In the end, England won the series 2-1, with England winning the last test match by 9 wickets in a very low-scoring game. there wasn't many high performers, and that was a lot to do with the bowling of James Anderson, who is now one of the best bowlers in England. He's been there for a long time, but he ended up, I think, taking 6 wickets in the last innings, or he...
Yeah, 6 or 7. It was an amazing performance. There was one delivery that, I think, might have been a 600th wicket, but it just snuck through the gate, took out middle stumps, both stumps were flat, and it's a perfect bowl that you wouldn't want to bowl as a fast bowler into a batsman. And one thing I really appreciate about James Anderson and his type of bowler is they're not express pace. We're not talking about bowlers of ball 145, 150k, and yes, he might have done that in the past, but similar to someone like a Glenn McGrath, even a Zahir Khan in the tail end of their career, they're good enough that they adjust their craft, bowl that 130, 135 line, but through subtle variations, they tend to do really, really well. And that's what Jimmy Anderson does, particularly in favourable conditions in swing, when the ball's swinging. He tends to do a good job, and that innings demonstrated that. I was actually quite disappointed in that test match. West Indies got smashed in the first one. They came back and won the second one against England. And the third one, look, it was close for about a day or two, but it would be nice to see West Indies put up a bit more of a fight. But on the whole, it's been a good series for the West Indies.
Well, it was very important for England to win the third test. The next big series coming up for them is going to be against Australia in the Ashes. Yep. So going into that series, they needed to get some big wins on the board. This series was expected for them, and they should have won it. But if they had lost, it might have been sort of catastrophic for their confidence. And yeah, we can preview that series a little bit later, but it's good that England pulled it out. Jimmy Anderson as well, he's had a long career. Seemed like he's been around for a long time. I can't remember when he debuted, but I must have been like 5 years old back then. It was a long, long time ago. And yeah, he's done well.
Yeah, I would probably agree that he's probably one of the best bowlers in world cricket right now, especially test bowlers. And I really like that point you made, Pralab, about how he sort of tailored his craft. He's not like a bowler that's going to blow you out the park with his speed, but his variations and his swing is some of the best in the world. There is a whole conversation about whether Jimmy Anderson is sort of a home track bully, or is he just a great test bowler overall? Because at England, yes, he's dominant, but he hasn't had as much success outside of England. Nowhere near the same results he's had outside of England. So that's a good question. Now, what do you guys think about Jimmy Anderson and his... I guess his status as one of the best bowlers in the world.
Yeah, look, I'm somewhere on the fence on this one. So I do think he's done well outside England. He hasn't dominated in Australia, but he's had moments where he's done amazingly well, which to me demonstrates he's got the talent and the ability to do it. I still think back to the series in India where England ended up winning Monty Panesar, Graham Swan, but James Anderson picked up a 2 or 3 for in a short spell of 5 overs that actually got him the win in that deciding test match. So he definitely has the ability. He plays a role and he can do it well. Is he? But when you look at his average, it is very different compared to England versus somewhere else. And I go, there's a category above him, the Glenn McGraths, the Dale Steins, you know, that sort of category. He probably doesn't belong in that group, but he's very, very close to that group.
Yeah, I agree. He's not one of the greatest bowlers of all time, like the McGraths, your McGrath level. But look, he's had a long career, and people often forget about longevity. He's kept it up over a very long period of time, and he's been consistent for England. And you know, I think he's a very, very good player. And hopefully he continues this for the next couple of years.
Yeah, I like that he just plays test cricket as well. So,
but just one question on him and his sort of type. I was reading this article or this interview that Sean Tate and Irfan Pathan actually gave, and that was an interesting one. But it talked about the different skills required from test bowling versus ODI bowling, and how some players who are dominant test bowlers really struggle with limited overs. And the example he was using was Philander and Jimmy Anderson, who both tend to struggle in ODI cricket. I mean, what are your thoughts in relation to that? I think you can get away with bowling when the pitch does something for you and the ball does something for you in test cricket. You can get away with bowling 130 kilometres per hour and using subtle variation. But in the flatter pitches of limited overs cricket, those bowlers tend to really struggle in that format.
Well, first of all, I want to say I wouldn't really trust Irfan Pathan or Sean Tate's opinion on this topic, since they both don't have much of a test record. But look, Jimmy Anderson, I don't really think it has to do with his speed or why he's been effective in one format against another. He's just a player who, you know, he's not been that consistent while playing overseas. And that applies to a lot of bowlers. Indian bowlers, some other subcontinent bowlers, some Australian bowlers as well. So again, that's what separates the all-time greats from just the really good, really good bowlers. And yeah, I think we just have to accept and appreciate Jimmy Anderson for what he is.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. I mean, in India, we have the same kind of situation, not with our seam bowlers, but you can take Ravi Ashwin, for example. He's, you know, one of the best test bowlers because he knows how to bowl. He knows, he plans, he strategizes, he gets a batsman to play his game. He has all the techniques to, and all the tools in his mind to get the ball out, to get the batsman out. But when it comes to ODI cricket, he goes all off. He goes all off the rails. He tries a faster ball, slower balls. He loses all everything, and he doesn't stick to what he does best. So I think it's a different mindset as well. That's a big thing as well. So Jimmy Anderson is a test bowler, and he knows how to bowl in test match cricket, but in ODI cricket, his record isn't as good because it's a little bit of a different game. But yeah, look, good stuff to talk about. West Indies did also win the T20 match, which was good because West Indies are champion T20 team.
Well, it's meant to be a rematch of the grand final. Yes. Mine is Ben Stokes, where Brayford hit the four sixes in a row. That's so right. It's good to see the Windies win that.
Yeah, Evan Lewis, I don't think many people have heard about him, but he's becoming like a Chris Gayle almost. He's smashing the ball at the park. He had another great innings this time. Chris Gayle, congratulations. 100 T26s, the first batsman to do that, which is astounding. He is really one of the best T20 players, I think, around. There's no disputing that.
We'll talk about the rankings a little bit more later, but I think West Indies are the best T20 team in the world. It seems like whenever it counts, they really lift the game to the next level, especially with these young players coming through. A guy like Gayle is, you know, he's playing regularly for the international team again. And look, they're the team to beat.
Yeah, I completely agree. For me, they're the dominant T20 side. And even a limited overs, I actually rate West Indies very, very highly. And the good news is their test performances are lifting, which has been brilliant, as that England test series showed. And also, from a board perspective as well, things are starting to improve. So they're going to get access to all their best players as well, which is only means positivity for the West Indies.
You know, with the recent rise of West Indies and Bangladesh and even Zimbabwe playing well recently, it's been disappointing to see the drop for Sri Lanka. It would have been great to see a really competitive top 10 in the world, but it seems like we're only going to get 8 or 9 good teams as usual. So let's hope Sri Lanka can, you know, get back to form within the next couple of years, but it's looking very dark for them.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't want to drop down to all the other divisions. I think it was Italy that beat Vanuatu. Vanuatu that beat Italy.
Yeah, yes, right. And Vanuatu could probably beat Sri Lanka right now.
So that's not... Let's write to us, cricket.tonight6@gmail.com.
Or my personal email if you want to send
us a personal email that people apparently write to. Please write in about what your thoughts are. Would Sri Lanka beat Vanuatu or not? Look, my view is I think they'll smash it, but you never know.
Yeah, look, I definitely agree. But yeah, look, not to worry Sri Lanka anymore. I think we talked about them enough.
One thing I will say is that when I was traveling in Europe for about a month, I spent some time in the Netherlands, I spent some time in Italy, and I spoke to a few of the locals about the cricket team. And in Italy, I felt a lot of people weren't really aware that there even was a cricket team, which is not a great sign for the team. That's why they're losing against teams like Vanuatu. But in Netherlands, people were quite aware of cricket and how they're actually improving. And obviously, it's not up to the levels of soccer. Soccer's the next level. That's like a religion more than a sport. But, you know, in some of the other European countries, hopefully cricket grows in the next couple of years.
Yeah, but cricket is very big. I mean, we're kind of diverting off, but I mean, even sort of France is talking about getting cricket involved in the Olympics, and they have a lot of World Cup divisions that come about. So there's a tournament that happened recently. You know, like Netherlands have even players that have played for Netherlands who have been great, like Ryan Tendersasa. I don't know if I'm pronouncing the name right, but he's he's a legend in county cricket. And you know, I think Rolf van der Merwe, he was also from Netherlands.
Yep.
Yeah. So I mean, there's players from there. So yeah, hopefully cricket in Europe will keep expanding. I guess now probably the biggest tournament, the biggest news that's happened is actually the Pakistan vs. World 11. This was the biggest thing that happened in cricket, I think, in a long time. And it took over all the storylines compared to anything else we've talked about so far. The biggest news about this wasn't necessarily to do with the game. It was just the fact that there was cricket in Pakistan again. There was a World 11 team, which consisted of a mixed bag of players, you could say. The likes from Paul Collingwood, Darren Sammy, Grant Elliott, Tim Payne. You might think I'm just naming players on the top of my head, but no, these are actually...
It sounds like pick the odd one out of that group you just named, by the way.
It sounds like the talent. It suddenly sounds like the 2010 World 11. Like somebody's played, or maybe...
But Imran Tahir was there. There were a couple of... Faf was there as well.
Amla
played with George Bailey was there. Amla was there. So there were quite a few players around. Yeah. But you are right, Ami. It's that big moment when cricket coming back into Pakistan. You have to call out to the ICC. ICC have been deplored for the big three and all that happened a few years ago. But you look under Shashank Manohar, the moves that have been made, removal of the big three, expanding out to associate cricket, redoing the constitution, and now bringing cricket back into Pakistan, which is amazing for the fans and the people of Pakistan who have been starved for cricket for so long.
And it was great timing as well, about a few months, less than 6 months after Pakistan won the Champions Trophy. So you know, great time for Pakistan cricket. I'm sure this is going to create a lot of goodwill for Pakistan, and they're going to get more series in Pakistan shortly. You hope so. And it was also a good win for Pakistan as well. They won 2-1. They were a better team this series. And yeah, let's hope we see more positive things in Pakistan moving forward.
Yeah, from all the stuff that I sort of saw online and sort of all the feedback I looked at, it looked like it was a huge moment for Pakistan, the fans especially, because to see cricket in your country after so long is huge. You know, Pakistan, as I've sort of said before, they've sort of done so well as a team that can't even play cricket at home, yet they've still managed to be relevant in cricket. That's a huge thing, I think, because, you know, they've found ways to play in Dubai, and they've sort of, you know, they've won big tournaments, and they've always been in the news. They've done quite well for a team that, you know, we compare them with the best, but if you look at the situation that they're in with their board, with their country, with the situation that's there, they're still there, you know? That in itself is, great. Like, you know.
And it's very much a cricket-crazed country. And can you imagine how India would deal with not having any games in India for the last couple of years? It's a similar sort of thing. I mean, Pakistan, cricket is the number one sport far and away for Pakistan. This is what, you know, so many people love and care about. It's like a religion there. So, you know, just for the fans themselves, it's great to see a return of cricket there.
Yeah, and I think the way the Pakistan Cricket Board have done this has been really good. So they've been hosting the local T20 team. They then moved that into Pakistan, the finals into Pakistan, despite there being security concerns, and pulled that off without a hitch. And that gave the confidence to then pitch this series. And yes, it cost a few million dollars. I mean, the players were all paid over $100,000, which I'm sure contributed towards their decision to actually tour the country. But you go into, you know, I think it was a FAF or one of the players said that the reason why he wanted to do this was he wanted to be able to tell his grandkids that he helped build cricket to Pakistan. And, you know, I'm sure the $100,000 helped as well. But on the whole, the big picture is they've actually managed to host this really successfully without an incident. And that gives a blueprint for success for future countries to come in and start touring Pakistan. And you look at the world at the moment, it's really important, right? Like Afghanistan had a few blasts here and there. England, which is unfortunately on critical alert with the terrorism-related issues. India's got its own challenges as well. And, you know, even I think South Africa had one or two of their coaches have been murdered recently in some sort of domestic tournament. So there's been like lots of various issues happening around the world of cricket. And it's really good that the players are looking at the bigger picture and going, we need to make sure that fear and terrorism doesn't win in this scenario. It's really about everyday normal activity, as long as it's safe and we've got all the precautions in place, will take priority. And that's great to see that. And I really hope that Pakistan, the next assignment, wherever it is, will end up touring Pakistan. That goes really well as well.
Yeah. The good thing that I sort of also sort of found out was that a lot of the players were really, really happy with the situation that they were in Pakistan. You know, they all said it was very safe, very secure. They enjoyed, they loved the fans there. And they felt very good about being there. There's no scares or anything like that. Like players like Darren Sammy, Paul Collingwood, all these players who, you know, they might not be the greatest cricket players, but they've all had big moments in cricket, and they all came out and they were very appreciative of everything. That's a huge moment. And so if Pakistan do actually have a few tours which are potentially scheduled, I think West Indies are scheduled to come there for a short tour, and Sri Lanka also potentially there, but they're all potential right now. It's all based on whether they decide to go ahead with it, but hopefully I'd love to see a series happen in Pakistan. If an India series happens there, I think the world will explode. But
hopefully not literally. I mean, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but there hasn't been an international game in Pakistan since that Sri Lankan tour.
No, there was a Zimbabwe series.
That was Zimbabwe series as well. But that was one of the last tours. I think that's what started off the controversy. So it was good to see a Sri Lankan player or two in the World 11. I think Pereira played there.
That's right.
So that sort of shows that, you know, Sri Lanka is willing to back Pakistan as well. And look, that's what I hope for. That's what the world wants to see. India, Pakistan, in Pakistan. Yeah. I don't know when that's going to happen, but let's all keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah, definitely. It's talking point was that in the World 11, without an Indian, it doesn't feel right. You know, I think every other country was represented, from New Zealand, maybe Zimbabwe wasn't represented, but Bangladesh was represented with Tamim Iqbal. West Indies had a few players there. Australia had some domestic players playing.
I think India could have at least sent like a Rashid Dhawan or somebody who's like...
I don't know if he made a squad.
Somebody. We should have thrown them
No, but I think the bigger picture was, and I get why India hasn't sent someone. Right now, it's still an issue with the government, the India-Pakistan ties, and the government hasn't formed a clear-cut view on what's happening with cricket with Pakistan. So I think that's the reasoning why. But I do hope that does get sorted out soon, because I would love to see the tours that are going... India-Pakistan tours that are scheduled in the upcoming year or so, for them to be played in India or in Pakistan, respectively, wherever they are meant to be scheduled.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, great stuff, Pakistan. We're really happy for all the fans, all the listeners of this podcast who are fans of Pakistan. We're really happy for your country and your team. We're going to move on to, I guess we can do the Australia vs. India preview.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll see that. Wind up. So, we have a Australia versus India ODI series, which I think a lot of us are questioning the purpose of this. I myself do not understand the purpose of these random bilateral tournaments. I guess the only thing for this is that there's a World Cup coming up, so you can treat it as preparation for that.
So it's a long time to go for the World Cup, but I do agree. Right. There's always context issues, like Darren Lehman skipping the series to focus on the Ashes.
Yeah.
India's got a rotation policy involved. I mean, Russian's playing county cricket at the moment, which is doing really well. You know, I think he picked up a 5-4 to last game, which is good signs. But also Australia, a few players are injured / resting for the Ashes. So the context is always an issue. One thing that is meant to be progressing is some of the ICC changes, and that's also going to look at the context of ODI and T20 cricket. So my understanding is they're looking to build ODI leagues that run in line with the World Cup. So in the future, all the series will be a maximum of 3 ODIs if this proposal gets up, and each series will provide some context. So you play home and away over a period of 2 years, and at the end of that, you get points and there's an ODI leader crowned, or you have a playoff for the top 2 teams. So I think, you know, right now, context-wise, there isn't a lot at the moment, but I think in the future there will be. But regardless, right now India does need to explore some of the players that they have available. They've been testing out a few different players, and I'd be interested in your thoughts on who needs to perform well for India. So still a few question marks on opening slots, middle order, spin bowlers, even the pace bowlers. So definitely some opportunities for some of the younger talent of India to make an assessment, make a case for them to stay in the team.
Yeah, definitely. Look, we could start with just the openers debate, which we could probably spend the whole podcast just talking about this big sort of a controversial topic. And it's Shikhar Dhawan is not going to be playing the first 3 ODIs.
Mm-hmm.
He's got some personal issues. So we're looking at a situation where Rohit Sharma is opening the batting with either KL Rahul, who is an opener in Test cricket and T20 cricket, and has opened in the past. Or we're looking at your favourite players, and you can't run it.
Lucas Rahul's a natural opener. He opens domestically. He opens in one-day cricket. He has a good one-day record.
I don't agree with that. I don't think he has a good one-day record.
Yeah, he does have a good one-day record. If you take away when he's batting out of his position in the middle order, he's not a number 4 batsman. He should be opening. If everybody's healthy, I'd still play Shikhar Dhawan and Rohit Sharma ahead of him. But right now, there's an extra position open, and I would put him ahead of Rahane. So Manish Pandey would be my number 4 right now. If he's healthy, he's played well, he's had a good record, he's been good domestically as well. So I'd put Rohit Sharma along with KL Rahul. I think KL Rahul struggles a little bit in the middle order to turn to strike over. Struggles with composure in the middle order. As you'd expect, I mean, it's like expecting Shikhar Dhawan to bat at number 4. Like, why would you do that? It doesn't make sense. So I'd go with Rohit Sharma, KL Rahul, Kohli, Manish Pandey, Kedar Yadav, and Dhoni. I'm probably skipping ahead with the whole team, but that's my very solid top 6 for India.
Yeah, look, broadly, I tend to agree. Like, for me, Lokesh Rahul, he should be the reserve opener. Whilst Rana has done well in the West Indies series, and he probably deserves to be in the team based on his performance, I still don't think he's a player who's going to win it for India in the 2019 World Cup. And we need to look beyond him, and his record over the last 4 or 5 years speaks for that. So Lokesh Rahul for me is a player who could be there, and I think I see him as being the reserve opener if Rohit and Shikhar Dhawan are fit. And then Manish Pandey rate very heavily. For me, he's a lock in the number 4 position, or the number 5, depending on how he goes. And Kedar Yadav, to me, he adds a bit with the ball. He's still a question mark, but I think he deserves to be in the team right now. And Dhoni, so far the selectors have backed in him, and he's actually had a brilliant series with the gloves and also with the bat recently. So I'm comfortable with him being there at the moment.
You're definitely a big fan of Manish Pandey. Are you saying he's locked in at the number 4 position because of that one good score against Australia 2 years ago? Like,
no, after
14 games, to lock somebody in, that's a...
Yeah, look, I think it's based on his talent, it's based on his temperament. Even the A-series that we look at against South Africa, and South Africa, he chased down a massive total in the last innings. He's got that ability to perform under pressure. That Australia game demonstrates that. So one of the big things India lack at the moment is a season finisher. MS Dhoni, for me, he's done it in the past. I don't think he still has the ability to do it to the level he had before. And India needs someone who can take control of an innings, apart from Kohli, and actually win it for them. And Manish Pandey, for me, strikes me as that player. Kedar Yadav, to me, based on all his experiences, for me, is not a player who, when the crunch is on, will be able to deliver a match-winning 100 in the circumstance that we need to. Manish Pandey can, and that's why I rate him very highly.
If you look at Kedar Yadav's record, he actually has won a few games on his back. Most of those have been in India, but look, India have just played at home for the last couple of years. Manish Pandey played well in the India A series. I don't see why that should lock him in a position in the international squad. Also, that one match against Australia was almost 2 years ago. So, look, even though I said he should be at the number four spot, he's definitely not a shoe-in for that position. I want to see him perform over the next few months or so. And if he does, he has great potential to be one of the key players for India at the next World Cup.
Yeah, look, that's a good debate. I definitely agree with Pralab. I'd rather have Manish Pandey because I think he's a better player, despite whatever the statistics say. Manish Pandey is, I think, a more quality batsman. And he's definitely a better fielder.
Against who?
Manish Pandey.
Comparing against which player we compare.
Kedar Yadav.
Oh, Kedar Yadav.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if we have them both in the team, that's okay. But if I had to pick one of those two, the situation was like that. About the Rahul situation, that's a tricky one for me because if we're going to say Shikhar Dhawan and Rohit Sharma, I think, will be in the ODI team for quite some time. It's looking like they're not looking like they're going to retire soon, or unless there's a serious drop in form, it'd take a big deal for especially Rohit Sharma to be out of the team. He's like one of the mainstays, and Shikhar Dhawan's not far behind either. So if you're going to play Rahul as an opener and there's no spots for him, then why would you play him in the team as number four? That's something that wouldn't happen like they did in the last series. So if that's the case, as a backup opener, I'd probably put Rane, even though I think he's a pretty fine batsman. He's not great. If we're not taking Rane, I'd rather go for another option altogether as the opening spot because it doesn't make much sense.
Just to clarify that, so you're saying if Shikhar Dhawan and Rohit Sharma opening, the third spot should not be Rahul?
Not the third spot.
As in the third opener.
If you're going to play a batsman as a reserve opener, specifically just for that part, then I guess you could. But I don't think teams... If he's going to be in a team for just a reserve opener spot, I don't know what the point on that is. That way you're just thinking about a player. You're basically thinking if something happens between the openers, we'll have a player on our team.
That's fair. No, look, that's fair. I think it's worth building out certain people in certain positions. So, like, there's still 2 years left. Rohit Sharma could get injured. Rohit Sharma could lose form. Shikhar Dhawan could lose form. And Lokesh, for me, is that number three batsman. I still think he can bat in the middle order. So, for me, he's...
Yeah.
I look back to India's last World Cup squad, and Rana was the floater in the team. You can come in and fill a gap at the opener or the middle order. For me, there's no way Rana can do that. Lokesh is someone who can actually do a decent job in the middle order. It's not his ideal position, but he'll definitely do okay. And opening, he can definitely do that as well. Hence why I have him as, if he can't break into the 11, and right now I do not have him in our first choice 11, he could still be there in the top 15.
I've always said that Rohit Sharma could bat in the middle order if need be. I think he has the ability to rotate the strike pretty well. He can hit boundaries. If Lokesh Rahul performs like I think he has the potential to perform, he will be knocking on the door for a permanent position in the squad. So I could see a scenario where Shikhar Dhawan and Lokesh Rahul opens and you could have Rohit Sharma at four.
But is that really fair? Like, I kind of look at this and go, Rohit Sharma is... It would be like displacing Kohli from number three. Someone who's dominated for the last 4 or 5 years. Why do you want to change the entire makeup of the team to bring another player in who he hasn't proven anything in ODI cricket?
I think the one gap in India's top six right now is number four. I think Manish Pandey should have the opportunity to prove himself. If he doesn't, this is a scenario that could play out, is all I'm saying. I don't trust Lokesh Rahul's ability to bat at number four. I don't think any of the other players in the squad could bat at number four. So if push comes to shove, I'd feel comfortable with Rohit Sharma filling in that spot. But that's only if players like Manish Pandey don't really perform.
Yeah, so what do you guys think about sort of the bowling lineup that India has against the series? I guess one thing we'll mention is that Jadeja is back in the squad after not being the first pick. Don't know if you guys know, but he had an angry tweet on Twitter about this.
Did he?
He mentioned he was like, he was angry about the fact that he wasn't selected for a consecutive ODI series because he missed the last one as well. Then Aksar Patel rolled his ankle playing soccer.
Was he playing Jadeja?
Yeah, probably something like that. But... yes, so Jadeja's back. Ashwin is being rested again. I think Chahal is also there. Pandey is obviously there.
Kuldeep.
Pandya is also there. Kuldeep's there. And he's one of the... Australia have already sort of mentioned that they're weary of the spin threat from Kuldeep. What do you think about Australia's chance in the series? What do you think about the spin attack?
I think there's a bit of rivalry between Aksar Patel and Jadeja because they're both very similar bowlers.
There is.
And Jadeja might feel that his spot is being threatened, especially as he gets a little bit older. And Jadeja hasn't been that great in the ODIs of the last 6 months or a year. So Akshar Patel is knocking on the door. Look, with Kuldeep, Akshar Patel, Jadeja, Chahal, these sort of bowlers, I'm very comfortable and very confident in India's spin stocks moving forward into the next World Cup. So that's good to see. I think Australia's going to have a tough time facing these spinners in Indian conditions. And look, Australia's going to have to step it up.
Yeah, look, I agree on the spin stocks. At the moment, Akshar Patel and Jadeja, it's a big question mark. Jadeja, for me, is not a lock in the ODI team, and the recent decisions showcase that.
Yeah.
He's still the best fielder in the Indian team. He's far better fielder than Akshar Patel. Akshar Patel is still serviceable.
Yeah.
Akshar Patel, bowling-wise, and Jadeja seems to be pretty similar at the moment, and batting-wise, he'd probably back Jadeja in. But I could see a scenario where Akshar Patel goes ahead of Jadeja in the upcoming 2 years prior to the next World Cup. So I do get that bit of rivalry there. And then you think of the other spinners, and the biggest weakness India's had, have got very similar type of bowlers with their spin bowling attack. And Ashwin's doing a great job in county cricket, great for him to prepare for the series next year. But I'll be looking forward to seeing how Chahal, Kuldeep Yadav, etc. go, because there is a spot open at the moment for India as this finger spinner coming in ahead of that 2019 World Cup. And Virat Kohli's entire philosophy has been, we want to have a squad of about 20 to 25 players to trial over the next 2 years, get some game time into them, so come that 2019 World Cup, they can pick the best squad based on the circumstances involved.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on India's pacement in this series?
We're going to have Shami and Umesh Yadav come back, which is good because they sort of had a bit of a rest last series. And Bhuvneshwar will also be there. Thakur misses out, who was had a decent, I guess, start to his career after waiting a long time. But look, I'm pretty happy with... In India, I think, look, the pace's rules are not as big, obviously, because, the spin dominates there. But I think Australia, I think India is in a good position with their paces as well. After, it's been a long time since they've had such good seam attacks. And it's also fully soft right now, especially with Bhuvi and Bumrah and Shami and Yadav.
And you got Hardik Pandya in there as well, the fifth
hammer. Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you've got a good stock of bowlers right there. It's been the best it's been in a while. So overall, India's bowling attack from start to finish is pretty good with a lot of sort of interchangeable parts. Be good to see Shami back. He's already sort of come back in the test team and he sort of had an impact. It'll be good to see him in the ODI series as well now.
Yeah.
And see how he goes. And he's regarded as one of the best seam bowlers there is.
With Pandya really stepping it up over the last 6 months to a year and really proving himself as a genuine all-rounder, it does give a lot of flexibility for Indian selectors. I mean, you were saying before, Prahlad, that Jadeja is a better batsman than Akshar Patel. But with a player like Pandya, that gives India the luxury to go, we don't really care about the batting as much. For the spin bowlers, we're going to select Akshar Patel because he's bowled better in the last year. So Pandya, we've always said, is the key at the number 7 spot. And look, I agree with what Ami's been saying about the pace bowlers. If Shami, Bhuvi and Bumrah are healthy, I'm happy going with those guys into a tournament. And then if you have Umesh or maybe even a player like Thakur backing them up, I'm feeling pretty comfortable.
Yeah, and it's such a great thing to say that we've got such good pace bowling stocks. I mean, think back to a few years ago and when India had an injury, Ishan Sharma was the next one back into the ODI team. And, sure he's had his moments in the sun. But the reality is, right now, India's pace bowling stocks are really good. Spin bowling stocks are really good. Opening stocks are pretty good. The middle order's got a question mark to it. But on the whole, India's in a really, really strong position across all formats of cricket.
I'm just so happy that it seems like Ishan Sharma is out of the mix. It took us 15 years to get rid of him, but it seems like he's out now. But look, there's only like one or two injuries, and I'm sure he'll be right back into the mix.
So he did win us a test match in England. I will give him that.
What I will say, and it's sort of a little bit off topic, and not talking about this series in particular, it'll be really interesting to see how India perform in overseas tours and how these pacemen in particular perform. They've done really well on flat pitches. So I'm quite confident they have the ability to step it up. But look, I'm very excited for the next year when India start touring.
Yeah, that's going to be great. I think they've had a lot of preparation. The confidence is very high. And Virat Kohli has been a great leader behind them. He backs the bowlers really well. I think that's really good as well. Like, I really like how he sort of changed the culture of the team. It's more sort of a winning team. And he backs the bowlers a lot. I think, they're in a good place right now with their bowlers. And I'm also looking forward to sort of seeing how they go overseas as well. Just quickly, we'll just talk about the Australian team. They've also had an injury of theirs as well. So Aaron Finch, the main opener, is actually injured now. I think Peter Hanscom's coming into the team. Yeah.
I actually think Head will end up opening, though, with Warner.
Yeah, he's pretty good as well. Travis Head. So, yeah, what do you think about Australia's team? People are saying that this is the worst Australian ODI team to tour India in forever, from what I'm reading. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, look, they're a decent side. I think they'll give India a bit of a fight. If I think back to the last few series, it was really a run fest. So it's about the pitches will be flat. Scores you expect around 300+. Like the first ODI average score is like 260. You'd expect with modern bats and everything, which will change on the 1st of October, which is good news, but the scores will be massive. But you look in there, Steve Smith for me is still the key. You've got David Warner, who dominates in ODI conditions, particularly on flat pitches. So I expect the batting to do quite well. There's a question mark on the middle order. And bowling-wise, their pace bowling stocks have been hampered by a lot of injury slash rest for the Ashes coming up. So it'll be one really interesting one to go through. One player I'm looking forward to seeing is Stonis, who's had a really good start to his career. I think he won a game off the own bat against New Zealand when he debuted. And it'll be good to see how he goes in Indian conditions, because there's a lot of hype about him. Whether he's going to deliver to that hype is one to be seen, but it'll be nice seeing how that happens.
I'm definitely going to predict India win the T20 series and the ODI series.
Yeah.
This is one of the weaker touring sides we've seen from Australia for a while. Definitely not full strength. And bring back to what we were saying earlier, I like when Australia tours India, there should be a test series as well. That sort of adds more more gravity to the series. And especially because, like, if India win the test series, you know Australia's going to make sure they have the best ODI sides that they can come back. You know what I mean? There's always that, you know, you look at the whole tour, there's always sort of a battle within that tour to sort of level it off. And that's not going to happen this series, just because I don't think either team is placing too much importance into it. I think it's more seen as a warm-up for series coming up after this, like the Ashes for Australia or a few other series for India. So, look, I think India is going to win, and I think, you know, Australia are going to struggle.
So if you went score prediction, out of the ODI series out of 5, what would you think it's going to end up at?
I think India is going to win 4-1. I think.
And the T20 series out of 3?
I think India is going to win 2-1 there.
Ali?
I would probably say, well, Argentina might be closer than we think. I think there's a bit of hype. I think with Kohli, he might start to experiment a lot. So I don't think he minds if he actually throws a game or two, as long as they win the series. So I'm going to say 3-2. I think David Warner's coming off great form after playing in Bangladesh. You know, Shakib Ali Hassan was a great spinner. He's got some experience with that. And of course, he's played so much in India, especially in the T20 IPL League. He's the captain of the Sunrisers. So he's well adapted to the shorter formats in India. Steve Smith, of course, is there. So
Faulkner as well, finally back in the Australian team. So the big Faulkner series for him.
Yeah, big talking point. Faulkner's back after a lot of controversy he's been involved with. But good to see him back. He's brought some nightmares to India. He's that kind of finisher I kind of hate watching
at the end sometimes. Although Kohli's taken apart in multiple occasions.
That's also there as well. So I'd probably say 3-2 for the ODI series. And for the T20s, it's a tough one. I'd probably say India probably win 2-1 as well.
I tend to agree with 4-1. I think Australia will end up winning a game because India experiments. T20 for me will be a lot closer. I could see Australia getting up, but at the moment I'll predict India 2-1.
Yeah, it should be a good series, despite the fact that there's no context to it.
Yeah.
But you know, at least we had some good cricket, and at least we'll be good to see some players, and it'll be good to see, of course, the bowlers and batsmen and everything like that. Yeah, so we'll just quickly touch on some other things that have happened in cricket. We'll start off with JP Duminy, who's now retired from cricket. He's just tried from Test cricket. I think you could have sort of.
He's trying to pull a Shafi, but he's not as good. No, look, he's a solid player. No, I think he's been. You know what's interesting, JP Duminy, right? Such a talented player. When he bats at 4, he averages over 100, and that's the spot AB de Villiers traditionally occupied. But he's been given a shot at that with AB de Villiers semi-retiring from Test cricket and just hasn't performed at all. And I think he's late 30s or mid 30s. Time for him to, I think, wrap up from Test cricket, and hopefully he ends up being part of the team for the ODI and limited over series.
He's an okay player. I don't know if he deserves his own segment on a podcast. like I said, with De Villiers' departure, you have an opportunity to really step up. But you know, he's been okay. He's had an okay career, and he won't be sorely missed. No, I mean, I don't want to. No, he's a good player, and it'll be sad to see him go.
So you've got the Sri Lankans outside, so that's okay. Anyone left?
Yeah, but one thing though about South Africa is they seem to be in a situation where players just keep dropping out for different reasons. Philander's injured, Stein is injured, AB de Villiers takes a sabbatical, JP Duminy retires, Carl Abbott goes to play in England, You know what's happening with this the South African team? Are they?
Oh, the Faf's now the captain in all formats. Yeah, that, which is a big that, move. That's, and they've got a coach, new coach as well.
That's great news with Faf. But it seems like to me that Faf and AB are kind of these two players that are just left there. Faf and Umla are sort of these two players that sort of stick around, and whoever else is available will just come and play with us.
But they're ripe for the picking when India tours there in January, which is what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, so Stan, you can keep resting that shoulder of yours or whatever it is. WWE, thanks for that. But yeah, so that's that news. Another sort of big piece of news is the IPL is now confirmed. We have Star Sports have won the bidding at $508 million per year. I'll repeat that again, $508 million for IPL, which goes for about 3 months in a year, has been bought out.
That's crazy numbers, like unprecedented in cricket. Not just in cricket, right? In the sporting world as a whole, this is on par with some of the major sports around the world on a per game basis. So it's amazing news. And I thought what was most interesting was the fact that the internet rights, Facebook put in a bid for $750 or $800 million and ended up losing out to Star, who ended up, I think Star picked up everything. But that to me suggests where the future of the industry is. It's really about online streaming. Like Lalit Morty back in the day, he had that arrangement with YouTube when they bid for the rights, and IPL was live streamed everywhere. The future for me is all these streaming players. Like there's Amazon is going to launch their own streaming services, I understand, and Netflix and all these guys, they're going to move into this sort of sports entertainment category. And I expect them to start playing really competitive tensions in the future IPL rights and just general sporting rights across the board.
Yeah, I think it shows how profitable the IPL is. And as you were saying, it's only really 2 to 3 months out of the year. If it is so profitable, I expect IPL to continue to expand their league out to taking out more months of the year. So I actually predict that the next 5 years, there'll be more of a power struggle between the ICC and the IPL. And that'll be an interesting debate for our fifth or sixth season on the podcast.
Yeah, definitely. It's a big piece of news. And I really like that comment that you made, Prala, about the digital streaming. Cause that's a big player right now. Look, cricket's huge and it's good to see, I guess, if you're an IPL fan. That's sort of a nice sort of comeback that we're getting from Brendan Taylor. He's coming back, the Zimbabwe player. We were privileged to see his last innings in New Zealand when we were sort of covering the podcast. You can rewind to our old podcast and talk about what we thought about him back then.
What a beautiful 100 against India.
Yeah, beautiful 100, which was actually quite scary, that match. Zimbabwe almost won that match. Took a special innings from Reina, I think, for India to win that. But yeah, Brendan Taylor's coming back. He's not going through with his contract in England, and that's great. One of the things he sort of mentioned was that he's more pleased with the results I see from Zimbabwe cricket in terms of, one, they're playing the field, and from an administrative purpose, from an administrative standpoint as well. He's sort of liking the sort of, the governance that they've put in, and the players are getting paid more now and everything. That's huge news. I think this is huge news for Zimbabwe cricket, because they're already, I remember in the last series I was just saying, if Taylor was here, my god, they would have beat they would have beat Sri Lanka in that test match. Now he's actually here, so that's huge.
It's big news for Zimbabwean cricket. I think when he returns, he's immediately the best player in Zimbabwe cricket. He was having a few issues in England, I know that, so he's returned back to his national squad. And look, after that big series win against Sri Lanka, Zimbabwe are riding high. And, they have some upcoming series. I think one of those will be against Bangladesh quite soon. And without Shakib Hasan, that'll give an opportunity for Zimbabwe to challenge for that series. And, yeah, great news for Zimbabwe.
Yeah, and we flagged this in a podcast series a couple of podcasts away. We talked about the ICC reforms and how more money was flowing through the teams, and that would lead to other countries potentially keeping players like Brendan Taylor in the future. And it's great that he's come back. Pride for his country, and this is really important, not just for Test cricket, but also qualification for the ODI World Cup, which is dropping to 10 teams. Zimbabwe is going to need to qualify for that, and having Brendan Taylor there, assuming he plays ODI, which I'd expect he would, is going to be instrumental towards that, because at his best, it's like watching poetry in motion.
Yeah, he is a really great player. I don't think many players have actually observed him because he's from Zimbabwe, but he is actually a really fantastic player to watch. One of the best I've seen in a while. Like, we're lucky to see him live, as I said before. And if you get a chance to watch a Brendan Taylor innings, just watch one. He's great. One last piece we'll just cover is ICC have some new rules. So new reforms, as you mentioned, Prala. There's a new rule about, I think the first one is about running between wickets. We won't have this situation where the bats get stuck anymore. it goes up. It's just if you have your bat in the crease at any point in time, then that's it. You won't get run out after that. Was it the umpires are now? No, there's DRS in T20s.
Yeah, that's right. So like I think it's working out. So there's a couple of DRS changes. The first is the umpire's call now means you won't lose a review.
That's really.
So, no, that's, I think that's going live on the 1st of October. So okay. All these, and this is actually post the Australia India series because they're not doing it partway through a series.
Yeah.
But umpire calls means it's not, you no longer lose a review. And in test matches, your reviews don't no longer get topped up. So all you get is two reviews at the start and that's it. Yep. In ODI cricket, you get the one review. And then in T20 cricket, my understanding is they're introducing it, but it's purely one review per team. So irrespective of whether it's in innings or not, you just get one review to use across the whole thing, provided it's unsuccessful. So I think they're important changes. It's good to bring standardised DRS across the board. You mentioned the grounding of the bat rule, which would be really, really good.
Yeah.
And the other third big rule coming in is looking at bat sizes and having some sort of standards placed, which is really important as well. So like David Warner and all the big batsmen at the moment, they're going to have to shave off some of their bats going forward.
Yeah, that's I think the bats one's probably the most interesting one. Because that's gonna be a big difference between the bat and ball struggle, So that'll be it for us for this episode, and this will also be the last episode of the season. So we want to thank everybody, firstly, for listening to our podcast. We've had really really great success this series, more than I think any of us expected. So big thank you to everybody. Of course, thank you Prahlad, thank you Gaurav, thank you Pukit. Of course, you were also here.
We hope to be back in about a month's time for our next season. And it's one of the, what expand what Army was saying, we expect big things for our next season. We expect a bigger social media following. We're going to expand ourselves to Facebook, Twitter. We're going to hopefully have some interviews and some deep dive episodes onto different issues in international cricket. So expect big things from us. And, we're one of the top ranked podcasts in the world right now, and we're growing every single season. That's all thanks to you, the listeners.
Yeah, thank you very much. Really appreciate everyone listening in. And as Gav mentioned, there are bigger things in play for cricket tonight. Very excited. But I think what I'm most excited about is summer's about to come here, right? And we're talking about Ashes in Australia, but also the Indian series happening. And there's nothing better than you've got a backyard with a drink in your hand, listening to the cricket with some warmth coming in from the sun. And that's when we're really excited about the summer coming up and covering it through as part of our next season.
What I'll say is I'm most excited about hearing Prahlad's new theme song for next season. So stay tuned, because we don't know if it's an electronica version, if it's an acoustic version. We don't know what's coming up. But yeah, you can always email us at crickettonight6.
Cricket.tonight6.
Cricket.tonight6@gmail.com. We're also on Twitter now. So you can follow us on that. Our handle is crickettonight6. Someone's taking cricket tonight. If you would please give us that back.
I think we deserve it.
Yeah. So again, thanks to everybody. And we'll catch you in a month. Cricket tonight.